Welcome to the Azure Security Podcast, where we discuss topics relating to security, privacy, reliability, and compliance on the Microsoft Cloud Platform.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 112 this week. It's just myself, Michael. Everyone else is busy. And our guest this week is Ryan Munch, who's here to talk to us about security co-pilots and security co-pilot agents. But before we get to our guest, I just want to take a little lap around the news. I actually have some pretty important items to talk about. The first one, this is honestly just from my old stomping ground in Azure Data, but this is actually really important. I really want to stress this one. There's a blog post written by one of my old colleagues about why it's time to migrate from system.data.sql client to Microsoft.data.sql client. It's not just about adding features. It's also about the fact that Microsoft.data.sql client will support more security capabilities moving forward. So for example, things like TLS being enabled by default, that's all enforced in the client. So if you've got managed code that is currently running on system.data.sql client, you need to start moving across to Microsoft.data.sql client. Next one is if you're using Azure Dev Test Labs, we now support Generation 2 VMs using Trusted Launch. So this will give you much higher kind of robustness and basically just more secure workloads, because it will support things like secure boot, virtual TPM, virtualization-based security or VBS, as well as Microsoft Defender for cloud integration. Next one is Virtual Network Tap. So we now support a virtual network terminal access point or a tap that allows you to continuously stream virtual machine network traffic to a network packet collector or an analysis tool. Very, very cool, very commonly used, but now we support it in our VMs. Azure Front Door Web Application Firewall, or the WAF, now supports Capture. This is actually in preview, but it's great that they've now added Capture support, which is there to help block malicious automated requests. Next item is in public preview, we have inbound private endpoint support for standard version 2 tier of API management. I mean, I've talked about this many times, but there are certain things that are happening across Microsoft, things like customer managed key support versus system managed keys, managed identities versus usernames and passwords. Another big one is better support for private endpoints. So it's great to see that API management is now supporting that for standard V2. Another one, which is kind of a little bit what we're going to talk about for the rest of the day, is Azure Firewall is now integrated with Microsoft Security Copilot. I'm sure that Ryan will explain this in a little bit more detail, but this is something we're certainly seeing across the board. I probably should add to the list, managed identities, CMK, and private endpoints. We're seeing more support for Copilot across various security workloads. Next one is that the April 2025 progress report for our Microsoft's Secure Future Initiative is now available. It's not only available as a document, it's also available as a recording as well. So you can listen to it for those who have vision impairments or prefer to listen to it. It's available for you to listen to as well. And the last item before we finally get to Ryan, there is now versionless customer managed key support in Azure Database for PostgreSQL. There's a blog post written by my old colleague and actually co-author as well, Heinrich Gantenbein, that explains the rationale why it was done and how that is supported in Azure Database for PostgreSQL. So again, here's another example of a product using customer managed keys. All right, so that's the news out the way. Now let's turn our attention to our guest. As I mentioned at the top, our guest this week is Ryan Munch. Ryan, would you like to take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thanks for having me on, Michael. It's great to be back. I'm part of the Microsoft Security Copilot product team. So in the team, I'm focused on a few different things. One, growing out our partner ecosystem, specifically our MSSPs and how they think about building agents. And then a myriad of different functionalities, such as logging within Security Copilot and agents.
All right, so let's get stuck into the agenda. Look, so I mean, you hear sort of Security Copilot or the term Security Copilot kind of thrown around almost with abandon. So what is going on with Security Copilot and agents, which is what we're here to talk about? So what should our listeners know about? Like, what's the elevator pitch? If you were to walk out of an elevator after talking to somebody, what would they know about Security Copilot and agents?
Yeah, so what I tell them in an elevator, quite simply, is like, we have moved fast in the past year and a half. We were the first solution out to market. We've learned a lot, and we have now evolved into what I think you see typical across a lot of different Microsoft AI solutions, and that is we are now an agent-based AI platform.
All right, so really, really dumb question. Like, when would people use this? Like, why would they use agents? There are examples of where it's being used. I really want to keep it super practical. Like, what can people walk away with understanding how it can actually help them?
Yeah, and you know, we've seen like an incredible journey of our customers over the past year and a half since our private preview and even our launch. And it started with customers going in and looking at things like scripts and email headers and trying to see what AI could do for them in a security context. We started off working pretty broadly. And where it's evolved and what we've seen from our customers is that they are still workflow and very much task-oriented. And where we can help the most and where agents help the most is, we believe, with specific tasks that are either mundane, repetitive in nature, or take like a lot of manual effort, stuff that really pairs well with a human and needs an analyst in the loop, but stuff that you don't necessarily want to do. So a good example of this is user-submitted phishing email triage. That's one good case. Vulnerability analysis with whether or not you patched a system or patched different applications. That's another practical and pragmatic use case. The other one that I really like as well, it kind of gets into more of a something you don't always need, but something that a lot of security practitioners maybe aren't necessarily as familiar with as those that live it and breathe it every day, which is threat intelligence. And knowing what a threat actor is, how they operate, or how they specifically would attack your organization isn't something that everyone is always up to date on. So that becomes something that can empower people in a way that would otherwise take a lot of time.
I mean, there are lots of tools that people use, you know, outside of, you know, the Microsoft tool set. Are there integrations with other services that may, you know, that people may use on a daily basis?
Yeah, and this is a great question. And candidly, like, it's one of my favorites because I think it represents a philosophical shift of how people perceive what Microsoft is doing, but also reflects a lot of like what we passionately believe that security should do and how it should operate across any ecosystem. When we look at what we're trying to achieve with Security Copilot, we recognize that a workflow could exist in any state. You could be starting it, you could be beginning it, you could need to augment it anywhere in between. And a workflow could persist across any number of different systems, and it could exist exclusively outside of a Microsoft system. So what this means is that we have to build out a solution, a platform that accounts for all of that and provides for that possibility. Otherwise, as a good steward of a solution provider in the security community, if we're providing a solution that doesn't allow that expansion, we're creating another security gap. We're creating a blind spot. So we are creating and working with agents from the mindset that this could tie into any solution in any workflow state. So this ties into like the exact like philosophy that we're trying to part. There's a lot of significant news we've announced over the past few months, both at Secure and as well as at RSA. But for me, I think ServiceNow was a bit of the most significant bits because it backs up exactly what we've been saying, and that we have to work with partners and we have to meet users where they are and however they work. So with ServiceNow, they released a plugin, but more significantly, they also integrated Security Copilot into their Security Operations Center. And that's now something that their customers in a private preview can go out and enable and begin to work with. And what this reflects and what you'll start to see across more and more different platforms and Microsoft partners is you will see Security Copilot live in more interfaces. You will see agents that are more accessible, and you will see agents that then are able to work with you in whatever workflow you are tasked with. And so it becomes something that's hands-on and right there for you. Now, specifically for ServiceNow, what this allows is it kind of exactly what you think. Immediate incident triage and ability to then advance it using the power of the Security Copilot platform.
So sort of keeping with that topic, I mean, why is it better to use agents than what we've been using before? And that sounds really silly. Can you give us some examples of what we were using before? I mean, what sort of things can using agents improve over what people are currently using?
It's a great question that you raised there, Michael, for a few different reasons. I think it splits into two facets for me. One is like the journey of AI, and two, it's the traditional journey of how you solve solutions in a security context. So if you think about the AI journey and where Security Copilot started, we launched a ChatGPT style interface. And we did so building on top of what now everyone refers to as a compound AI system before people even really knew what that was. We built a stateful AI, we had session memory, and we worked with multiple LLMs based on what we decided was relevant for a particular task that needed to be done. At the core of this, we built what was called an orchestrator. In a lot of ways, it was a precursor to what agents are today. And agents effectively are a means to decide what system to use against the task at hand and to provide the end-to-end solutioning, if you will, of whatever you're trying to achieve or what the agent is designed to achieve. And so with agents, in a lot of ways, it represents an evolution of what we started with Security Copilot and the orchestrator to probably what is something that is more robust, more evolved, and has a greater industry support. Then if you pair that with, well, should I build an agent and should I work with agents in a security context? And I would say, and I this is a cop-out, I get it. I would say it depends. It depends on where you can insert the value of either non-deterministic solutions, meaning agents can work really well in a way where it needs to consider different inputs to provide the ultimate goal and ultimate output. So if you are looking across, let's just say, a phishing email triage scenario where you maybe need to look at a handful of different indicators, the indicator types are different, and you need to consider, we'll call it N number of different sources based on the type of indicator. Well, if you were to build one standard agent and you were to deploy that against 50 different customers, or let's say you are a security provider and you're working with all your different customer environments, that could mean that you're working with any number of different threat intelligence sources, any number of different vulnerability scanners, any number of different endpoint systems that would need to perform the analysis of, does this phishing email impact my environment? And if so, how? And what an agent can do in that case is provide the means in which it can decide what is available in this deployment, what should I use to solve and triage this phishing email, and then provide an output for human review. Now, if you contrast that to what you have currently with email triage, you're going to have maybe some type of script or SOAR that's going to go through, pull out those indicators and enrich them. But you're going to build that very specifically for maybe one customer, or maybe you provide enough branching logic where you cover all those possibilities. The point is that it becomes something that's static in nature and also is difficult to or more challenging to maintain over time. The other part, too, is when I look at SOARs and when I think about tips, they generally fall into the category for me of automate it and forget it. You're scripting it and you have an input and output. Agents aren't really built like that. They are built more from the consideration of, based on how we have gone to solve this particular task, we want your input to validate the solution. And that becomes a means through which it takes some of the mundane analysis, like of a user-submitted phish, automates the process, and allows for human input. The final thing that I tack onto that scenario, I think that is also different from a traditional automation versus what agents can do, is at any point along the way, they can invoke LLMs in a meaningful way to solve a solution. So the other reason why an email is a really good articulation of this emerging and evolution of agents in a security context is that LLMs can look at the context of an email and decide like the semantics of the language use. You know, is this business venture from Nigeria something I should invest in? Can I really trust this prince? Those are the things that it's really good at pointing out and saying, you know what? This is a phishing email, even though I don't have any indicators that match. Based on the other attributes that don't match any known indicators, we can classify this email as a phishing email. And then in that moment, what you have that what you wouldn't have before in a traditional automation scenario is validation of a phishing email with net new indicators that you can then keep and store for any other future analysis. And that becomes something that's meaningful and impactful in a security context.
You mentioned before you used the word compound. Does that mean you use multiple LLMs? Is that the origin of the term? Like, is that what's inferred by the word compound, or is it something different than that?
Yeah, great question. So there's a paper that was put out by the Berkeley AI Research Center, or BAIR. And I probably just killed the acronym, but if you Bing that, you'll get right there. So they have this great paper that details a compound AI system if you want to read like the full like academic breakdown. But if you distill it down like simply to what it represents, when AI systems were first built, they were monolithic in nature. Let's train an LLM, let's set that loose on a particular problem, and let's see what it can do. Well, what they found out is that in the edge cases, especially in security or in things like healthcare or other industries that have a lot of specialization and a lot of unique language or context that's used, LLMs don't really work. And they don't work because they miss that information. So compound AI systems started to address that problem by integrating or starting to establish more traditional paradigms of system architecture around the LLM. So you have to find a way to either take an LLM and source it with data. So that's what's called retrieval augmented generation, where a data store can be used to then infuse the result or produce a better result for the LLM, where the LLM can not only rationalize the information being retrieved, match it against the context, and then provide an output. And so that's what, for Security Copilot, that's why we created this session. And for everyone's like own edification, like that's also why like Security Copilot does things like includes all of Microsoft's threat intelligence as part of the core product, because we believe that that should be part of what's included in any solution. The other thing that it refers to is that in a compound AI system, you're right, you can use multiple LLMs and you can be specialized in how you invoke an LLM based on the need, the context, or otherwise. It gives some flexibilities in terms of the architecture to use a smaller LLM in size and training data or specialization ultimately. Or in some cases where you maybe need to process more data, have a greater token limit, which can be computationally more expensive and take longer to produce a result, you can do so. Or if you just need to do a simple task and you can use a base model and do that faster and more efficiently. So it gives greater flexibility for what you'd expect, and that is addressing the task at hand in the most relevant way and an efficient way possible.
Yeah, I'd seen the term compound thrown around and I just wasn't sure of the context. So, I mean, at Microsoft, look, I'm going to be honest. I think at Microsoft we have a lot of AI solutions right now. And honestly, for me, it seems a little confusing as to what does what and so on. So why are agents different than, say, using Copilot Studio? I mean, what do I use Copilot Studio to create these? I mean, what happened? I don't understand the relationship between security agents or security Copilot agents and all the other sort of AI offerings that we have at Microsoft. Because can you spend just a few minutes and just sort of compare and contrast?
Yeah, well, good news, Michael, you're not the only one that has this same confusion. I was just at RSA, and I was in a room full of CISOs from Spain, and they all had similar questions in terms of what is this agent thing from Security Copilot, and how is it different than all these other Copilot solutions? And I get it. Microsoft at this point probably has a full like airshow squadron full of Copilots. But we have a general philosophy across Microsoft to learn, to innovate, and report back across no matter what engineering group we are to see what we can do to advance AI solutions. And so what this means is that in Microsoft, we have different solutions that are built for a specific purpose. So for example, if you wanted to build an AI service yourself or an AI solution yourself, you would work with one of our AI services, whether it's Azure AI Foundry, which deals in AI primitives, or Azure Open AI Service, if you just want to work maybe with some off-the-shelf models, that's there if you have the developer mindset and are looking to build something on your own. If you look to Copilot Studio, it's a way in which you have like the sea of agents and all these different business logic solutions that you can use, but it's generally designed to operate in a business context for office-related responsibilities. Now, you can do things, and this is one of the interesting things I like to point out, like you can in Copilot Studio, you can call back to Security Copilot and invoke a prompt and retrieve that prompt response. And for me, that's significant because it underscores the point. The reason why Security Copilot is its own platform is that we have to build agents in a security context that can operate across an enterprise in a way that demands a high level of workload capability, reliability, but also security. And that means we have to build it a little bit differently to handle all those specific use cases. Copilot Studio, if you're going out to summarize a document or summarize a Teams chat, you're usually operating in a user context that's like one or a few. But if you're looking at, for example, find me all these user-submitted phishing emails and triage them, well, you can be talking about anywhere from one email to potentially a few hundred or thousand. And that becomes a different way in which we have to think about architecture.
It's interesting you should bring up that you're talking to people at RSA. I see that at RSA, we announced a book of news that talked about partner agents and so on. Could you sort of explain that in a bit more detail, like what was announced?
Yeah, at RSA, we announced a few things. We followed up on Microsoft Secure and highlighted the partner agents across Microsoft that we've built. So for example, there's a conditional access agent that exists for Microsoft Intra where you can activate in the Intra portal. There's a threat intel briefing agent, a vulnerability remediation agent from Intune. And then I talked about a little bit of like the phishing use case. Well, sure enough, the Defender team saw the value too, and they built out their agent to do exactly that. And there's also an alert triage agent for Microsoft Purview. Now, on the other end, we have a ton of stuff that was released by partners. We have initial five that came out from both across what we call our partner developers as well as our MSSPs. We had seven agents announced there, and then we had a few different plugins as well. In addition to like ServiceNow, we had Splunk and HP and Census all provide some plugins. And I'm going to quickly differentiate or call out plugins are what we use initially with Security Copilot to connect to systems. Plugins are now something that we can use in agents and use in an agent runtime. So it's all complementary architecture and complementary solutions. But the significance of this news, in addition to what I talked about earlier of ServiceNow, is that it shows the depth of the ecosystem that's emerging and our desire to continue to expand across solutions that are most impactful and relevant for our customers to solve real-world problems that they deal with every day.
Okay, let's just bring it back to sort of my neck of the woods, which is development. So if I want to use one of these security copilot agents in my code, what do I need to do? Is this something that developers would do, or is there like some drag and drop interface that a non-developer can do, like the current sort of coding du jour, you know, vibe coding? I mean, is that a possibility, or is it really this really something from a development, but like from a producing something, is this something that a developer would have to do, writing say code in say C sharp or Python or something like that?
Well, I think vibe coding is generally something you could do at any time in any interface. I think you just need a beer and a lot of will to do whatever. Now for what we're going to do with Security Copilot, this is where I got to be careful here not to get ahead of some of our news that's coming up at Build and other events. But what I'd stress is that in our recognition that we are heading down the direction of being a agentic platform for a security context, we need to provide different ways for the Michaels of the world to go out and develop agents effectively. So we've had conversations against low code and no code and we'll call it, I guess, hardcore coding experiences and how you would go out and build agents effectively. Today, what you'd see is like at minimum, you could still work with a manifest file like you do with plugins. But we want to make some of that stuff more accessible in ways that people would then extend the Security Copilot and build and bring agent functionality more readily in ways that empower them to work with their preferred tools.
All right, so Ryan, I think it's probably time to start bringing this episode to an end. One thing we ask all our guests is, what does a typical day in Ryan's day look like?
So a day in the life of me, it's just as chaotic as what you'd think, working in a product team that works on AI, launching agents and expanding in the way that we are means I'm pretty busy with a lot of different things. First and foremost, there's a good amount of time that I spend each day trying to stay up with what is going on with AI, how I can stay smart, remain smart, and anchor in both current conversations as well as future ones and future designs and how we continue to evolve our AI solution and continue to meet the needs of our partners and customers. The other thing I spend a lot of time on in my day is talking to our partners, what they want to build, how they want to build it, how they can best service their customers so that they can build agents and think about how they want to deliver agents to their customers to empower them in practical security workflows. You know, with agents, it's been something that it's net new to them, and it represents an exciting opportunity. And so for me, and as well as them, like, we get to talk about a lot of just like general AI philosophy, and I love that. And then the final bit, I think that probably like the non-work stuff is a good way for me to like relax and get out of the AI headspace for a bit, or maybe think a little bit more clearly, is I usually will end my day with a swim at an outdoor pool for a good 3,000 yards to wrap it up. And once I do that, then I'm usually ready for a bit more AI things before I call it a day.
It's funny you should mention sort of staying on top of things and constantly learning. I think that's so critically important in this, not just today, but also in the area of security and AI. And one thing that sort of really hit me the other day, just how true this is, I was in a call with a corporate VP, actually a bunch of corporate VPs, and we were explaining a vulnerability class, and this particular VP in question didn't understand all the nuances of it. It would have been very easy as a corporate VP for that person to say, hey, I know about this, but he didn't. And he ended up setting up a meeting called Make John Smart. And it was basically a 30-minute meeting with a bunch of us to go through this vulnerability class so that he fully understood the vulnerability and all the implications of it. That to me is a really good example of someone who's incredibly senior in the company, recognizing they don't know something, but also recognizing they kind of need to know it too, and doing whatever it takes to make sure that they learn that thing. And my hat's off to people who want to continually learn. I think that's just absolutely just so critical, especially now with AI. So one thing we always ask our guests is if you had just one final thought to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
I think it's going to be the approach for how everyone rationalizes agents and AI. Having walked the show floor of RSA just over the past week, everyone is talking about it. It's literally the talk of security and the talk of, well, our industry, the broader tech industry. So when you rationalize agents, you should think about how you're going to adopt them and what are your criteria to adopt them. And at its core of that, I would say think about agent transparency, how you can see what they decide, how you can see how they handle data, what outputs of data they provide, and probably most importantly, what they're doing to show you it's logging an activity. Through all of that, and I believe fundamentally, you should not implicitly trust a new system without getting a good handle and understanding of it. When it comes to AI, establishing a trust framework is even more important. And so as you think about adopting agents, make sure you have that trust framework in mind, work to achieve transparency, and through transparency, learn to understand how agents operate and how you can trust them or work to trust them inside of your environment.
Yeah, and on that topic, make sure if you're listening, if people are listening to this and you're not sure kind of what Ryan's alluding to, go and listen to our previous episode on that very topic about trusting agents, because the things that you do need to be aware of. All right. So let's bring this episode to an end. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us this week. I learned a ton. I learned a ton on all the episodes, but this one very, very much so. I think the intersection of security and agents is just mind-blowing. I think the possibilities, especially when we're dealing with AI-based attacks as well, we're putting up some sort of defensive mechanisms. So that's huge as well. So again, thank you for joining us. And to all our listeners out there, we hope you found this episode of use. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Azure Security Podcast. You can find show notes and other resources at our website, azsecuritypodcast.net. If you have any questions, please find us on Twitter at AzureSecPod. Background music is from ccmixter.com and licensed under the Creative Commons license.